My name's Bob and I am an alcoholic. Through the grace of a God that I was afraid to believe in, that I found out through Alcoholics Anonymous is crazy about me and has no taste. The 12 steps that are outlined in this book, good sponsorship and a persistent and consistent commitment and effort to the primary purpose of helping other alcoholics. I haven't had a drink or any mind or emotion altering substance since Halloween 1978. For that, I'm grateful. I owe you my life and my freedom. If you'll join me in opening with a moment of silence, and I'm going to open with a prayer. Lord, help me to set aside everything I think I know about you, everything I think I know about myself, everything I think I know about others, and everything I think I know about my own recovery, all for a new experience in you, Lord, a new experience in myself, a new experience in my fellows, and a much needed new experience in my own recovery. Amen. I am delighted to be here with my friend Ralph, who I have a tremendous amount of respect for his program and grasp of the big book, because this should be a lot of fun. We should have a lot of fun, the two of us, this weekend. We're going to start tonight with step one because we found it's more effective than starting with 11 or 12. page 44 talks about two things. It's two step one says we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable. And page 44, the fourth line down, talks about the two aspects of our powerlessness. It says, if when you honestly want to, no kidding this time, really, sincerely make up my mind that I cannot quit entirely. That's the first aspect. Just curious, how many people besides myself in this room have ever gotten to a point where you sincerely and legitimately said to yourself, man, that's it, I am never touching that stuff again, and meant it, and then got high after that somewhere? So we've established that most of us fit the criteria. If when you honestly want to, you find you can not quit entirely. That means you can't smoke nothing entirely. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later. Or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take. Once I start, something happens to me. And it says if you have those two things, or if you have either one of them, the chances are you're probably alcoholic. But we are going to see as we go through this book, to be an alcoholic of the type this book talks about, you may not realize it when you come here as a newcomer, but eventually you realize you have both of those things in place. On page XXVIII, in the doctor's opinion, we get to a portion where Silkworth starts to talk about why it is that once I start, I have little control over the amount I take. I thought for years maybe it's just weak will, or maybe I'd just be like a moral degenerate or something. And it's not any of that. On the beginning of the page in the first full paragraph, Silkworth says, we believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. Well, a couple points. One, he's talking about a type of alcoholic, chronic alcoholism. There's a difference between a chronic illness and an acute illness. And there are people who are diagnosed as alcoholic that aren't chronic, that are acute. And an acute illness, the physical stabilization of what's going on with you is the end of the disease. Pneumonia is an acute illness. If you have pneumonia, is serious. Pneumonia could kill you. But if you get to a hospital and they give you the right antibiotics, they'll knock that acute condition of pneumonia out once and for all. You're good to go. You don't have to, no maintenance. You don't have to go to meetings, nothing. You're just over the pneumonia. But a chronic illness, such as alcoholism, diabetes, certain types of heart disease, the physical stabilization of the condition is but a beginning in a lifetime regimen of recovery. It doesn't matter how, if you're a diabetic, it doesn't matter how perfect your blood sugar was last week. It doesn't matter how good you were with your diet, your exercise, and your insulin. This week's diabetes is a whole new piece of business. And that's, he's talking about alcoholics of that type. An acute alcoholic, potentially, his problem can be solved by a detox. Get the monkey off his back, he's good to go. And there have been alcoholics of that type throughout history. I grew up with a guy who, he was the first guy I ever knew that got a DUI. He actually drank himself one time so habitually to the point where he had shakes. First guy I ever seen, high school, had shakes. And then when he was in his early 20s, he fell in love, put the plug in the jug, and his alcoholism was over. He didn't get weird. He didn't notice, now that he stopped drinking so painfully, what was wrong with everybody. He didn't get depression. He didn't go in so insane sober that he had to go back to drinking or switch to some other drug or something. When he stopped drinking, his alcoholism was over. It ended with a bottle. I'm not that tight. I am the chronic alcoholic. And he says, guys like me, the action of alcohol on me is a manifestation of an allergy. But what's the allergy? I mean, you drink, you don't break out in hives. It's not like you're allergic to cats. If you get around a cat, your eyes start to water and your nose starts to run. When I ingest alcohol into my system, I break out in what Silkworth refers to as the phenomenon of craving. And he says something that's very interesting. He says that this phenomenon of craving, this allergic response to alcohol, is limited to us. It never occurs in the average temper drinker. Only people who have alcoholism have this. One of the things that the treatment centers often do with good intention, but it confuses so many of us and makes us crazy, is that they focus on your drug of choice. Well, I went into a treatment center back in the 70s, and a guy said, the treat counselor said, we didn't know what your drug of choice is. Well, that's a hard question to ask a guy like me. Because my only answer is, what do you got? I drank vanilla extract in a pinch. I mean, in jail, I broke open magic markers and huffed them. In a pinch, I'd do just about anything. Drug of choice. You didn't ask me the right question to see if I have alcoholism. Do I have the single definitive characteristic of alcoholism, an allergic reaction to alcohol that manifests itself in a phenomenon of craving? And looking back objectively, if he would have asked me that, I don't know that I could have seen it. I don't know that I could have got that I had that. And one of the reasons that it's hard for a guy like me to see the phenomenon of craving when I drink is that I never seem to get a sense of like clawing the walls for another drink. I don't experience a craving. But cravings are funny things. You don't realize you're in the grip of a craving until you can't satisfy it anymore. Everyone in this room right this second is in the grip of a craving that you're not even aware of. And that's the craving to breathe air. But if someone were to sneak up behind you and put a plastic bag over your head, you would instantly realize you got this craving to breathe air because you can't satisfy it. And one of the reasons it was so hard for me to identify the phenomenon of craving was that I avoided situations where I could only have one or two drinks or one drink and a hit off something and then couldn't get any more for a while. And it's funny, I never avoided those situations because I thought I was alcoholic. It was an intuitive thing. I remember in high school, a guy had a six-pack of beer for me, and there was three of us. One six-pack of beer, it was Sunday, that was all we were going to get for the whole day. I passed. I told him, no thanks. Now, if he'd had three cases of beer, I'd have been right with him. Now, I'm not passing because I think I got alcoholism or I'm going to have to break out in a craving. It just, to me, it just seemed like, what's the point? What's the point? Two beers apiece? What's the point? And they don't even know that I have alcoholism. And then I was sitting in a meeting in the years that I was in and out. I listened to a woman talk about her experience at a dinner party, and the light went on. And I remembered an incident, and there was very few of these in my drinking because I avoided them like the plague. But I remembered an instance where I was dating a gal. I was 18 years old. I was dating a gal, and she invited me over to her parents' house for the evening to spend the night there. And they wanted me to meet them. And it was dinner party and all that stuff. And awkward deal. Felt like I was under a microscope, but trying to be a good guy went. And we get to the dinner table, and we sit down, and they bring out a bottle of wine. Now, not the kind of bottle of wine we would buy. This is a little wimpy Al-Anon kind of bottle of wine, right? A little tiny thing. And they pour us all a glass, and I've always drank quickly. I don't know. I think evaporation must be some secret childhood issue with me or something. I don't know. I drink fast. I drink, to this day, I still drink stuff quick. And because I drink fast, I get killed two glasses out of that bottle of wine. The bottle's dead, and they're still sipping on their first glass. Now, I don't know. I'm 18 years old. You could have put me on a lie detector and asked me, Bob, is there any way in the world you could be alcoholic? And I would have said, absolutely not. And I bet you the lie detector would have said I was telling the truth. But I had alcoholism just as much as I do today. And I'm sitting there, and I got two glasses of wine in me, and the bottle's dead, and I'm getting antsy. And I'm kind of getting a little squirmy, and man, I finally, after about a couple minutes sitting there, I finally blurted out to him. I said, you know, God, that was really good wine. Do you have any more? And they said, nope. And they went back to talking about sports and Vietnam and other kind of crap. And I'm sitting there, and I think I'm going to lose my mind. I'm spitting in my head. And what their conversation now is irritating me. And they finally blurted out. I said, you know, I sure like beer. And they said, we don't have any beer, Bob. And they went for, they said, the woman said, the mother said, the next time you come over, we'll get you a six-pack of beer. And they went back to talking. And I'm sitting at this dinner table, and I think I'm going to lose my mind. And I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm just crazy. I excuse myself. I go to their bathroom. I lock the door. I'm like a crazy person. I go through the cabinets, and I found a bottle of cough medicine. It was 35% alcohol with codeine and turpentine, which is a bonus. And I sat on the edge of that bathtub, and I chugged that bottle of cough medicine, and the spinning in my head just went, ah. And I could think straight. And I sat there, and I came up with a story. Went back out to that dinner table and explained to them about something that I'd forgotten to take care of it. I had to leave and take care of it. I was so sorry. They were very nice about it. I went and got my car, drove down their street, 20 or 25 miles an hour like you're supposed to. Turned the corner, got out of sight, and drove like a maniac to get to a friend of mine's house who had a bar in his basement because I'd had two glasses of wine. And it set something off in me that demanded attention. I couldn't put it to sleep. I just, this thing. And I've had that all my drinking and yet didn't know it most of the time. And one of the reasons I don't know it is that there's a line later in the book, and it says the alcoholic's problem lies mainly in his mind. That the disease of alcoholism uses my own mind against me. And it uses my ability to rationalize, to justify, to minimize anything it needs, any little story I have to tell myself in order to make the next drink seem like it's my idea and absolutely appropriate. I had this job. It was a telemarketing job. It was the only job I could get. I was a mess. If I could stay half drunk, I could sell stuff on the phone. I couldn't do it sober, but I could do it by half drunk. And I was actually one of their top salesmen. I was selling something for the Fraternal Order of Police or something. I don't know, some crazy thing. And a pathetic kind of job, but it kept me in drinking money. And I needed the job. And one day the boss comes in and he says, we can't put up with this anymore. You come in here reeking like booze every day. You cannot, and we know you got a pint or something hidden somewhere. Sometimes I did. And he said, you can't do that. It's a bad example to the other employees. These other guys, they're not drinking on the job. Well, they're lanes. He said, you can't do it. That's it. If we catch you one more time, you're out of here. Well, I need this job. So I'd already been drinking that day, so, you know, what the heck. But the next day I come in sober. Well, I get on that phone, and there's people are... I get a tad sensitive when I'm sober. And they're rejecting me. And I'm calling and they're hanging up on me. And they're being mean to me. So by noon, I'm angst up, right? I feel like I want to scream. I'm so uptight. And I take my lunch hour and I go down to this bar and I think to myself, I can't get drunk. But they can't smell vodka. I'll have a couple, I'll have one, just one or two screwdrivers. I'm shaking here. I'm uptight. I can't sell anything. For God's sake. It's for the good of the company. And I walk into this bar and I said to the bartender, give me a double screwdriver, a little splash of orange juice, double shot of vodka, a little bit of orange juice. I drink that down. Looking at my wall, I'll give me another one. Two. I know two of these I'll be fine. I'll go back to work. Just take the edge off. Good. Well, about halfway through that second drink, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, this is the United States of America, for God's sakes. I'm a taxpayer. I wasn't really, but I'm I'm a taxpayer. This is a free country. How dare they tell me? I don't hurt anybody. I don't get in fights with anybody at work. How dare they tell me that I can't drink there? I'm the best salesman. I don't get out of line. I just drink a little bit. I'm the best salesman they got. They can't tell me that. And I said to the bartender, I said, only had two drinks, and I'm going to go back there, and they're going to get on my case because I had two drinks. What kind of crap is that? And I said to the bartender, I said, do I look drunk? And I walked in front of him back and forth. He says, you look fine to me. I said, give me another drink. And I never got back there that day. I lost that job. Because every drink I've ever taken in my life makes me feel and consequently think that I need to have one more drink. I need to have one more. I don't even know that that's an allergic reaction to alcohol. I have no idea that alcoholism is punking me out so much that I think I'm burning my life to the ground and thinking that the road is my idea. And it's not. I'm in the grip of an allergic reaction to alcohol that I never knew I had. I never knew I had it. There's a test later on in the big book. The test says, well, if you don't think you're an alcoholic, go to the nearest bar, try some controlled drinking. Try to drink and stop abruptly. All right, let's take a little fantasy journey about a guy like me going to take this test. Okay, I'm going to go into this bar. I'm going to have two drinks. That's it. I'm going to shut her down and go home. Now, you can't smoke nothing, no pills, nothing. Two drinks, that's it. No social heroin, no nothing. Two drinks. Well, about halfway through the second drink, if you're like me, it's going to become very apparent. This is not a good test day. Because there'd be some member of the opposite sex in the bar that you'd think, oh, my God, that's them. That's the one. Gotta have a drink with them. You'd see the TV, the game is on, or that show is on. Some guy that always has something good to smoke would be coming in the bar. Gotta have a drink with him. He'll turn me on to something. Bad test day. Tomorrow will be a better test day. And then somewhere between the first sip of the first drink and the back end of the second, a feeling starts to come over me. And I try to test again, and as the feeling hits, I break out in an irresistible yearning for more of an effect, to get higher. I partied for years and years and years. Never once, because of an allergic physiological reaction to alcohol that uses my mind against me, never once sat in a guy's basement, passing around a pipe, drinking a bottle of wine, or at a bar, ordering shots and beers, and ever had the bartender say, after I've been drinking for an hour, say, Bob, would you like another one? I have never had the experience of that, of saying to myself, no, this is just right. I'm good. It's always one more. I tell you a little side story. I was over spring break. I went up to Boston with a bunch of guys to go to this big party we'd heard about up there. We're at this party. It was a great party. Guy came through with a bunch of capsules. Looking back, I didn't even ask him what they were. I just said, thank you. Took a bunch of them. It turned out to be animal tranquilizer. Well, in about an hour, I'm laying on the ground, on the floor. I can't get up, but I'm still conscious. So I'm laying there trying to talk people into bringing me drinks, right? Because I have an reaction to alcohol. And Silkworth says that this never occurs in the average temperature drinker. Do you know it never occurs in drug addicts who just are drug addicts? It only occurs in people who have alcoholism. After the Vietnam War, we saw thousands and thousands of people, by every clinical definition, came back from Southeast Asia with mega drug addictions to China White. Mega addictions. And there was a certain percentage of those guys that were like me, that even if you got them out of the environment, even if you got them detoxed through the VA, even if you put them in a different environment where heroin was no longer available, they'd switch to alcohol or something else or go or something. And then there was a lot of guys that came back that once they were removed from the stress of combat and once they'd been detoxed by the VA, 30 years later, they still have a beer or two on occasion and they never have to go on a run. They don't have the physiological allergic reaction to alcohol. Consequently, they may have looked like bad drug cases, but they don't have alcoholism. It's the definitive characteristic. That's why I know I have alcoholism. When I used to think I had a lot of other problems, I have alcoholism. You ever watched a non-alcoholic drink? My sister, I just had dinner with her. Me and my daughter and I took my sister out to dinner a little while ago because she's going through a little tough time. She ordered a glass of wine. First of all, it takes her a half hour to drink a drink. I mean, that's like alcohol abuse, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's evaporating as you look at it. I mean, that's a bad deal. And then she'll get to that point where she's starting to feel it. And she'll say the most peculiar thing. She'll say, I don't want any more. I'm starting to feel it. It's bizarre. She gets to a point where she's getting that glow starts hitting her and she goes, whoa, and shuts her right down. Because she feels like she's losing control. I get to the same point and everything in me lights up and I just go, because I get a feeling like I'm getting control. I have alcoholism. But if that was all there was, alcoholism, and this would only be an acute illness. And you'd go to a treatment center. They'd explain it to you. You'd come to your senses. You'd realize, oh my God, no wonder my life's a mess. I can't take the first drink, for God's sakes. Oh! And you'd be home free. Except that there's another aspect of alcoholism, which Alcoholics Anonymous is really designed to treat. It's the thing that drives us so insane we eventually go back to picking up the drink again. When you've sworn to yourself you never would. Well,
your problem with...
I'm Ralph White. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ralph.
Thank you guys for asking me to come out and share. Problem with Bob is I get caught up in his stories, and I could, you know, I want to sit out there with you guys. I'm not. In the foreword to the first edition to the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. So the recovery program of Alcoholics Anonymous is outlined in this book that we're going through. And one of the reasons we're here this weekend is to go through precisely how they recover. It's interesting because when I went into treatment, I started, when you go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, every time they read, they start reading the chapter 5. And they start reading the chapter 5. And I got interested and I got excited, and I'm the kind of guy that I'm a straight to the head right now guy. I'm interested in events. I'm not interested in the process. I want something right now. I want to take the cure, get the result. That's how I am. I'm instantaneous. So when I got in there, I thought if I read three times as fast, three times as much, you know, I'd get three times. And so I started reading in that treatment center, and I started in chapter 5, because that's what they read. So I knew that was the most important place to start the book. And opening the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous and starting in chapter 5 is like opening a math book and starting in the chapter on algebra. You know, I need to know some addition and subtraction. And so one of the things I needed to know was what it was that I suffered from. And that's our first step. Admitted that I'm powerless over alcohol and my life had become unmanageable. And there's two parts to that first step. And one is there's a physical manifestation. And the physical manifestation is talked about, and Bob started talking about that, the way that that shows up. Two parts, physical and mental. And the way that it shows up in me, you know, they put it in the front of the book, the doctor's opinion. When I go to the doctor for a physical illness, right? Most of us have been to a doctor before. When I go to the doctor, what does he give me if I don't know what I'm suffering from? He gives me a diagnosis. And that's what the doctor's opinion is, the doctor's diagnosis or what ails a guy like Ralph. So I go see the doctor, and I get to the doctor. And this doctor is Dr. William Silkworth, Bob already pointed out. And Dr. Silkworth provided a letter to the members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in that, at that time, you know, they thought it was very important to drop this letter at the front so that somebody wouldn't just say, oh, Ralph and Bob wrote a book together. We just saw them laying up in the alley 3 weeks. Why is anybody going to pay any attention to that? A book written by some drunk? So one of the things they thought coming out is, let's give it some legitimacy. Let's assign our book some legitimacy. And let's, because if we say that we suffer from something that's a physical illness, who's the expert on physical illnesses? Doctors. So they got this doctor to lend them a letter. And the doctor did some curious things when he wrote that letter. And he wrote a line in there, you say, and you can rely on anything that they say about themselves. You can rely absolutely on anything they say about themselves. Big statement. Big statement. Controversial at the time, the doctor was, you know, a guy, and doctors weren't really stamping an endorsement on this whole disease concept. Now, curiously, in the first edition, Dr. Silkworth didn't drop his name. He was stretching out for us, but he wasn't going to go crazy, right? And after there had been some sales of the book later on, in some later years, his name was put in the book. If you have a first edition, you'll see that it's not signed by Dr. William Silkworth. It's got something like XXXXX in there. So anyway, just an aside. So anyway, the doctor starts writing, and he talks about what ails me. And in, you know, if you do the literature, and I know we got a lot of H&I people in here, and in our Alcoholics Anonymous literature, we pass out handouts. One of the handouts we use is a 20-question test for alcoholism. Bob went to the 2-question test on page 44, and Dr. Silkworth starts outlining it. You know, if when I take a drink, I can't control the amount I take. Or if I don't want to take one, I take one anyway. And Dr. Silkworth breaks that down even more. And he starts talking about the physical aspect of the disease that I suffer from. It's something physically different about me. And I like the way that he outlines that. First, he calls it an allergy. And that part right there was odd. I had an allergy to oranges when I was a kid. I avoided them. I don't like scratching and itching and all that. I don't avoid alcohol. In fact, I go toward alcohol. You know, it does not make me have an itchy effect. It makes me thirstier when I start drinking, right? It doesn't make me want to avoid it. So I needed to know the definition of an allergy. And an allergy is an abnormal reaction to a food or a substance, you know. And so I have an abnormal reaction. The normal reaction to drink, you get a normal tipsy feeling, get that feeling that you wanted, you get a buzz, you cool, you do, you dance, you go out, you go hang with your girl, you do all the things you plan to do. That's the normal feeling, you know. I didn't even know the bottles came with caps till I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that I don't have the normal feeling, you know. I drink when I'm drunk, you know. I get thirstier when I start drinking. Abnormal reaction. And the doctor starts talking about that. He says this manifestation of an allergy, and it's a 1-question test. It's limited to this class. I like that. I like it. You know, but on XXVI, even before this, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as normal as his mind. So this book is not necessarily, it's not meant to tell me something about myself. What the book does and what the doctor does and what everything that is written in this book does, it's confirmational. It confirms. It confirms. It's not a book that's written theoretically. It's a book of experiences, and it's meant to transmit some spiritual experiences, and it's meant to transmit the experiences of some people who precede it. You know, and so I like when it says it confirms what we must believe, because I thought it was something different about me. I had it kind of twisted. I thought that I drank so much. I thought it was something physically different about me, but I thought it was because I had high capacity. I thought I drank so much. Yeah, I'm physically different. I can hold more than most people can. You know, the rest of you guys are weak. You poop up. You know, I got high capacity. And I didn't know that I drank so much because there was something physically different about me. And what it is I either have a regulator that's broke or I don't have a regulator. You know, there's a piece missing in me, or it's a piece that's defective in me. We don't know if that what it is, and we don't need to know. We just need to know that it happens. I look at my experience. I look at my experience. How do I know it's something that I suffer from, this manifestation, this allergy? How do I know I suffer from this phenomena of craving? And I go back and I look at my experience. And I don't look at the times I set out to get tore up, which is all the times I thought. I look at the times when I said, I'm just going to spend $20. And I say, what happened? I spend my whole paycheck. I look at the times that I said, I'm just going to go over the happy hour and I'm going home. And when they say last call for happy hour, I have every intention of getting up like some of my buddies do, because I'm with my work people now. So I want to be on my best behavior. If I'm at happy hour, I'm working, you know. Otherwise, you know, all day is happy hour. You know, so if I'm at a happy hour, I'm with my work people. So trust me, I'm trying to be on my best behavior. And my buddy says, Ralph, I told my old lady I'm going to be home at 8 o'clock. And then he looks at his watch, 7:30, he gets up to go. You know, they say last call for happy hour. I have every intention, because I told my old lady I'm going to be home too. But I just look at the waitress and I say, bring me 9 gin gimlets. I don't know where that comes from, but that last call, I know I need to stock up, and I'm there. And I close up the place. And then I go to the after hours of the after hours, because for a guy like me, it don't matter that establishments have closing times. The places I frequent don't have closing times. And I'm a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 day guy. I'm that kind of guy. Later on in the doctor's opinion, it says his alcoholic life seems the only normal one. You know, he'll start drinking yellow medicine, Jurius, but his alcoholic life seems the only normal one. I don't know if any of you guys or any of you ladies were married, and it seemed normal to not come home on a weekend. I would start wondering, I just thought my old lady shouldn't even expect to see me on payday. And I wasn't even tripping. She didn't even just, you know, what? It's payday. His alcoholic life seems the only normal one. It would be, it's no big deal to me, you know. It's stuff that I see now. You know, I walked on the street yesterday morning. Youngster was coming off the bus, and I was walking out of my car into this grocery store, and I did a double take because I looked at, man, I almost got a contact from this guy walking past me on the street. He was reeking, and I was like, oh my God. And then I had to, do you ever do a retroactive get embarrassed? You know, because I used to go to lunch and sit in a Volkswagen with four guys, and we'd be sitting in a Volkswagen. You know, you have that drinking lunch, and I wasn't a businessman with a four martini lunch. We just got a bus. We in this VW, and we in there, four guys, everybody smoking. You know, we smoking weed, and we drinking, and it's a cloud here. And then you do some Visine and a mint and go back to work. And and when this youngster walked by me reeking in the street, not in an enclosed, I thought back to, oh, my God. What did they think of me walking in this business establishment? And I did it every day. Sat in a car, all the windows, oh, don't look at me. He looking at me like he never heard of that. You were sitting in the car at lunchtime. Anybody else ever do that? Windows all the way up, you know. But the only normal thing to me is it seemed like everybody went to lunch like that. Because all the people at work, those are the ones I gravitated to. You know, that's who I gravitated to. You know, so his alcoholic life seemed the only normal one. You know, the doctor says, in our belief, any picture of the alcoholic would leave out the physical factor is incomplete. Now, I'm still on XXVI. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. I love the way that the book is laid out, because I'm not a theoretical guy. I'm not a virtuous guy, do some stuff because it's necessarily the right thing. And I'm a practical guy. I'm a practical guy. Show me something that works. He says the doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. Okay. This guy, this doctor, I'm reading this in 1986, you know, and this guy said something a long time ago. He has a theory that we have an allergy, you know. It interests me. As layman, our opinion as to its soundness may mean little. So I can sit up and analyze the doctor's opinion if I want to. He a doctor. I can say, oh, he don't know what he's talking about. Or I can say, yeah, I agree with him. You know, I was in that's the kind of guy I am. I went through treatment, and they went through the pleasure center and the endorphins and what happens when you drink. And I like being caught up in all that. Don't have much to do with whether or not you can get sober, but I like to entertain that idea. This paragraph says, Ralph, you don't even have to. It don't matter whether or not you agree with the doctor's opinion about this allergy. Doesn't matter if you can figure out medically why that happens. Then it says something like this. But as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which I cannot otherwise account. This idea that I have an allergic reaction. And that reaction shows up by me getting thirstier once I start drinking. It explained some things that I couldn't explain before, and it was relieving to me. I used to come home every 2 weeks broke. And that was my mission. I didn't want to have $3.20. Like, you know, no. Why would I want to have 86 cents? I want to spend I want to get the max out of my, and I would come home broke every 2 weeks. And my old lady would say something to me like, Ralph, how come you can't bring a dime home out your paycheck? And that wall will come down because by now I'm withdrawn and I'm retreating and I'm, you know, I don't answer. I get pissed off. But behind my wall, I'm thinking to myself, how come I can't bring a dime home out of my paycheck? And this doctor's opinion that I have an allergy, that when I take one, I'm no longer in control of when I'm going to stop. If you are a drinker of my variety, intuitively, there's a certain point at which you already know I'm spending it all. There's a certain point at which you reach a point when you say to yourself, I may not call myself alcoholic. I used to say that playfully, I thought. I didn't even know the definition. Well, why are you drinking? Oh, I'm an alcoholic, man. That's why I'm a man. I get loaded. That's what I do. I didn't know I was in the grips of a disease. I did not know that. But intuitively, I knew when I start, we don't know when I, and it got to be a point where I thought it was my intention. It got to be a point where I thought it was my intention to spend and come home flat broke. And the only time I would realize it wasn't my intention was the aftermath. Was the aftermath. On the front end, I'm like, okay, I'm going into this, you know. It got to be a point for me at which my entire mission was make it till Sunday because I got paid on Thursday. And it became stretching out the weekend as long as possible. And I thought that was an intent. I didn't know I was in the grip of a disease. And looking back, the doctor's opinion explained things which I, for which I cannot otherwise account. You know, so the doctor is thinking, so I'm caught up in this disease, and he starts breaking that down for me. You know, so why do I do this anyway? Men and women drink, doctor's opinion, XXVIII. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. And that's not just alcoholic men and women. That's people. We wouldn't sell alcohol if alcohol didn't have an effect. Everybody would just drink Mountain Dew, Dr. Pepper. I mean, if you drink it for thirst and if you drink it for taste, you can drink bottled water, Mountain Dew, Dr. Pepper, Minute Maid, Punch. You can drink all those things. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Now, men and women like Ralph take it a few steps further, you know, because this is when it starts describing me. The sensation is so elusive, while I admit it's injurious, after a time, I can't differentiate the truth from the false. I know I'm having some problems. I know I'm getting to work a little bit late. You know, I just probably need to, you know, start off. I need to take a different route. You know, I know that this alcohol, I probably shouldn't have mixed that gin when I was drinking Southern Comfort. You know, for me, you know, I had a problem. I remember somebody came to work one day talking about getting a DUI after being at happy hour. And he said the judge told him, and he was thinking of giving up drinking. I said, why would you think of giving up drinking? Give up driving. What the hell are you thinking? Dead serious. Didn't, you know. Admit it's injurious, after a certain time, I can't differentiate the truth from the false. You're just a bad driver. You know, it ain't the drinking, boy, but heaven forbid. You know, take a different route. You know, I remember, got popped. And the whole time, I'm sitting in jail in this holding cell, what came to me is not, you shouldn't have been driving dirty. You shouldn't have been drinking, you know, under the influence and driving. It's, damn. I knew I shouldn't have been on Western. I knew I shouldn't have been on. I'm thinking, why would you take Western? You know, that's the whole thing. That's all I'm thinking while I'm locked up. You know, making no connection between the rest of us. You know, the police are always on Western on Saturday night. That's how I'm thinking, right? You know, so I can admit it's injurious, but after a time I can't to me, my alcoholic life seems the only normal one. Restless, irritable, and discontent, unless I can at once experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once from taking the first one. So I'm a restless, irritable, and discontent guy. We'll get into that a little bit later when we go through the rest of this process. You know, that feeling in me, free of alcohol, restless, irritable, and discontent, unless I can get that sense of ease and comfort. You know, doctor's opinion, XXX. There are many situations which arise out of the phenomenon of craving, which cause men to make the supreme sacrifice rather than continue to fight. Situations that arise out of the phenomenon of craving. Lots of times I will sit up and I'll think I'm an all right guy. See, this is me. And later on, there's one of the stories that describes me to a T. The world is judging me by my actions while I'm judging me by my intentions. because I'm a good guy. And I never understood why people would come down on me so hard. And there are things that happen once I put the first one in me. Situations that arise out of the phenomenon of craving. And so when I do this first step experience, I ask myself a couple of questions. And I turn the statements in this book and the questions for myself. Have I ever experienced the phenomenon of craving? I don't know, Ralph. Have I? Have I drank more than I said I intended to drink? Have I overstayed my stay at a place where I said I was going to be gone at a certain amount of time? Have I spent more than I intended to spend? Have I done any of those things more than once or twice? You know, have I experienced the phenomenon of craving? And in the doctor's opinion, it says the only people who experience that are alcoholics. Here's the definition. If I have experienced the phenomenon of craving, then I am probably an alcoholic. How else do I know I've experienced this phenomenon of craving? Have I had situations that arise out of that phenomenon? Have I started drinking, left the kids before I go drinking, left the baby with my mom for 2 hours and come back in 3 days? Have I ever done that? Have I ever done that? Have I ever intended to spend money? Have I ever spent money? Have I ever started drinking, had the rent money, had the money for Pampers, had all my money? Have I ever started drinking and ended up not making it home with any of it? Have I ever started drinking and ended up with a brother's old lady or my wife's old man or somebody that I never thought I would have done that with? Have I ever started drinking? Have I ever started drinking and had the baby in the car and ended up with me on about a 16-hour or 12-hour run and maybe brought them into a place seeing a situation they never should have seen? Situations that arise out of the phenomenon of craving. Have I ever started drinking and in the morning didn't want to think about what happened the night before? Have I ever started drinking and doing some things that I said I never do? Did the line start moving for me? Situations that arise out of the phenomenon of craving. Certain situations in people like us that arise repeatedly, 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 and repeatedly and go deeper, 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 deep enough cause me to say, I'd rather check out than face going through this anymore. Have I ever been to that place? Situations that arise out of the phenomenon of drinking, you know. So then the book goes through and it describes a number of drinkers. And at the bottom of XXX it says, all these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. Hammering it home, hammering it home, hammering it home. Definition, alcoholism, physical allergy. If I start drinking and I develop the phenomenon of craving, then I'm probably an alcoholic. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. Here's one of the reasons why it's not enough to read the 12 steps on the wall and think that that is enough for me to get started on this program of recovery. See, the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous does a lot of other stuff for me. The 12 steps is a bare-bone look at what it is that we do. What step says we don't take the first one? Which step says that? Nobody can tell me which step says we don't take the first one. So, I'll figure somebody might say step one. Admitted that I'm powerless. I admitted I was powerless while drinking. I admitted I was powerless. Okay, I'm powerless over that. That's why I'm drinking. I know that I'm gone. That's why I'm drinking. None of our steps say we don't take the first one. In fact, in this next sentence is the first place it shows up. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is complete abstinence. Shows up in the doctor's opinion in the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. The only relief we have to suggest. How many people thought to themselves, You hear the saying when you get to Alcoholics Anonymous, the first drink gets you drunk. Who would have ever thought that when you was drinking? What kind of poop, what kind of statement is that? You ain't been drinking with me. first drink is where I first get started. I never would have thought to focus on that. I never would have thought if I wouldn't have started mixing drinks. I started with Southern Comfort. I shouldn't have went to that gym. And what would make me drink Brass Monkey at the end of the night? You know, I'm on Red Mountain. I don't even like the taste of that. You know, what would make, and so I'm concentrating on which one I mixed in the blend that I shouldn't have. Or drink number 6 set me over there. I was cool. I was maintaining, you know, I was maintaining, and I took that, you know. So I concentrate on that. Never would have thought. So our first suggestion, entire abstinence. That's the first suggestion the doctor gave. You know, so that suggestion right there comes from the doctor's opinion. You know, and it's the first suggestion about the powerlessness of the body. Now, the big book, just for a preview, the book is broken up in the table of contents, just to preview it. You know, somebody in here might want to know. When you're working with people, it's good to know it too. The way it's broken up in step one is the doctor's opinion all the way through more about alcoholism. Now, step one, and Bill's story obviously is involved more than just step one. But step one is in there. Step one is in this, there is a solution. More about alcoholism. When we get to page 23 and more about alcoholism, it goes to the second part of the first step, and we start focusing on the mental obsession. You know, so all the way up until then, we're talking about, you know, the physical allergy. When we get to page 23, it'll talk about the mental obsession. And all those chapters 1 through 3 are step one. Step two, we agnostics. That entire chapter is devoted to step two. Step in chapter 5, how it works, we'll find steps 3 and 4. You'll find a lot of meat in chapter 6, in chapter 6, into action, you'll find steps 5 through 11. And in chapter 7, working with others, is the 12th step. And we'll be going through that outline pretty much as we go through this evening.
Why don't we take a 9-minute and 12-second break?